Welcome to the Healing Grove Podcast. I'm Dr. Kristen Ryman, an integrative holistic family physician, author of Life After Lyme, and host in this virtual space of learning, healing, and growing. I believe humans are like trees, and our physical limb is only one of many. Health on all limbs of the tree, emotional, conceptual, social, spiritual, is absolutely required for the whole tree that is you to be vibrantly well. I created the Healing Grove Podcast as a place to showcase some of the world's best integrative and holistic medicine, to expose you to transformative tools and mindset shifts for all limbs of your tree. I hope you enjoy our conversation in the Healing Grove today as much as I enjoyed having it. Hi, Monifa. Welcome.
Hey, Kristen.
It's good to see you.
You too.
So before we get started, I just want to introduce you to this audience. So everybody, this is Monifa Harris. She is a trained operatic singer turned voice coach. She's performed in Florida, California, North Carolina, Washington, D.C., New York, Greece, Canada, and Bulgaria. And she's taught at Durham Arts Council. She now works online through her business, Impact Online Voice Studio. Monifa's work has been featured in multiple publications, including Breathing with Luz Idige by Dr. Shannon Wong Lerner. And she's passionate about helping clients understand the connection between voice and manifesting, and helping them to learn to use their breath and singing to unblock creativity in every area of their lives so they can move forward with confidence, ease, and flow. That really sounds good to me. I'm sure it sounds good to a lot of people. Before we get into how you do that, Monifa, I would love to invite you to share some of your story, because you come by this through your own journey with some illness, and I want people to know about what's gone on for you.
Yes. Well, and when I talk about illness, to me, it's the illness and the underlying features, right? So I grew up really shy, and I've had a lot of experiences of developing my voice, you know, from shyness. And so my first experience is actually with my back. I'm not sure I told you about that one. But it was actually, I had a car accident when I was married. My husband was away, and it was a pretty severe car accident. Somebody was stopped in the fast lane of a freeway. And I slammed on my brakes, and my car just, because I had bad brakes, and so I went into the wall. And so I was fine, except for the fact that about a couple months later, my back started going out. And so I would like go out every now and again and get worse. And finally, I just decided when I was laying on the floor one day, I just felt like singing. And so I started just humming and like just voicing, and I could feel the vibration in my back, and it felt good. I felt a little like, ooh, like a ball of energy there, but it also felt really good. And so I just kept doing it. And by the time I was done, I was able to get up and walk freely, and I haven't had back pain since. My back hasn't gone out since. I might have some tenderness now and again.
Do you remember what you were singing?
I was just voicing what I call voicing, which is basically I get inspired to make a sound, and I make the sound. I say, even if you're not a singer, like if you're making sounds or you can't hit the right note, then it's probably a note that you need to make, not necessarily the wrong note. So I think that you already kind of intuitively know what sounds you need. And if you just kind of live into that, then you'll get whatever results you're looking for, even if it might not be musical. And so the next story was actually very recently, about this time last year, literally. Mm-hmm. I was in the hospital for symptoms of, jaundice. And I didn't know what was going on. I knew it was bad because my mom was a nurse. I was like, this isn't good. There's not a lot of good things that come out of this kind of symptom. And they found out that I had a mass. And so I wasn't diagnosed until after my surgery. It was a long experience. They didn't even know where it was. They thought it was in my gallbladder, ended up being in my liver, 10 centimeters.
Wow.
And they never could properly diagnose it. All the biopsies and all that kind of stuff. I had like 3 ERCPs, I think a fourth for just diagnostic purposes. And it took forever for them to figure it out. By the time they figured it out, it was removed. It was, it never got past stage one of stage one. And I totally think that my singing and my voicing is what I call it, because I didn't have the energy to sing. My voicing and energetic work is what kept that from being a much bigger problem. I did adjuvant therapy because there is liver cancer, so they were worried. Although there was no, you know, all the lymph nodes were clean, all that kind of stuff. And so my adjuvant therapy finished in January. So far, so good. I had my current CAT scan. it's good. Yeah. Thank you.
So how did you know to try this?
That's a good question. I didn't even know to try it. I knew what made me feel better. You know, I knew what, because I was starting to worry. That was the other part of it. I was starting to worry because they were getting more frequent. My back was starting to go out more frequently. Like, you know, at first it was like once, you know, a month, and then another month I might get it down the line. Like, oh yeah, this is a thing. And then I started getting them like every couple of weeks. I was starting to get, my back was starting to go out. And then this one had been within that time frame. And so I was starting to worry that I was going to be like this cripple, right? You know, like, it was going to like cripple me, you know? And when I worry, I tend to make noise. And it's very interesting because this is, again, something that happened when I was a kid that I was really self-conscious about, because I'd make noises without knowing I was making noises. My mom would be like talking to me, and then she like one time she got really mad. She's like, "Are you listening to me?" And I realized I was humming. And I do it a lot too when I'm studying or like reading. And I realized, oh, well, like, yeah, of course I'm listening to you. That's why I'm humming, because that makes me concentrate, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's when I realized that other people, I was making noises and I didn't know I was making noises. I'm like, now I'm self-conscious because I'm a kid, like in school and that kind of thing. And I realized I was like, not just making noises, but like imitating people. Like, so people would make, you know, say something, and then like, I would say it because I wanted to see how it felt. Like, so there was like these little, I don't know, glitches in my makeup that have
all this kind of powerful.
That just, you know, voice was a thing for me. I never imagined I was a singer. I was so shy. Like, I would never say I was a singer. I had my master's degree, and I still wouldn't tell people I was a singer. So my master's degree is in opera performance, but I still wouldn't tell people I was a singer. I didn't believe that people would hire me as a soloist, even though I had been hired several times. So like, if you talk about imposter syndrome, like a lot of these things are actually, to me, matrices of the entire energetic makeup of somebody. And when you have that as a perpetuation in your system, then it starts to create certain things and in your body. And to me, that was what was happening with my liver cancer. I had to explore a lot of my emotional landscape that I just refused to acknowledge. Not refuse as much as didn't know it was there. Like, I had buried it quite well. So it was kind of one of those things where for me, there weren't a lot of things that can make me feel better. I lived in constant anxiety. I lived in constant fear. So there wasn't a lot that could make me feel better outside of sound, of that mm-hmm. humming and all that kind of stuff.
So a lot of people listening to this might be thinking, well, okay, I don't have back pain. I don't have liver cancer. You know, I don't have anxiety or shyness. Like, does a vocalizing or voicing practice, you know, is it, do I need it? What do I need it for? Like who would leaning into this kind of, I don't want to call it therapy, but it's kind of like a self-help tool,
oh, or for therapy, sure.
Right? Like who mm-hmm. would benefit from this? I'm guessing you're going to say everyone, but I just want to hear you say it.
Yeah, of course. I say everyone because everybody has a voice. And I feel like I have to say that because a lot of people think, well, I'm not a singer, I'm not interested in singing, I don't need to know about voice. And I'm like, okay, well, do you talk? Or do you, you know, like if you have a need to communicate, then you need to know what authentic communication is made up of. And if you haven't had an intimate experience with your voice, then you don't have any idea what it sounds like for you to be authentically communicating.
Okay, what do you mean by an intimate experience with your voice? That's a fascinating string of words.
An experience where you're consciously aware, when you're aware of how the body is generating what you need to communicate. Because it doesn't start with the sound. It starts with their breath, and it starts with the inspiration of the need to speak. And what singing does is it brings you into an aware perspective of what's happening when that happens. And I like to say, and the reason why, again, I feel like this is an everybody thing is because everybody needs to breathe. And knowing your breath is what, you know, what life is about. You know, if you know all the breath practices around the world, pranayama being the top one, it's about experiencing breath as a cycle so that you can really be in aware, conscious interaction with your life and yourself, right? Your body, because that's what's living, right? And so, yeah, it's very important. Intimacy is about actually feeling what that creation mode feels like. And so to me, it's the fastest way to practice manifestation. So what, you know, who does this apply to? Anybody who wants to create something in their life. Anybody who wants to transform something in their life. Because it starts with breath. And you can't know what's happening with your breath until you start trying to use it in an actual manifestation, which is, to me, a sound.
Wow. So this is both very simple and very profound for me to listen to you talk about this. And I'm sure others are going to be experiencing some of that too. I wonder if you could talk to us about what, if someone were to come work with you because they wanted to transform something, say their health or their mindset or their anxiety or their sleep through work with their voice, help us make the connection. What would that look like?
So it looks like, let's say, you know, you came to one of my clarity sessions. I do like free clarity sessions, and you just tell me what's going on with you, what you would like to change, you know? And then we talk about your experiences with voice, right? Because we all have had them. Even if the only one you can recall is that, you know, mom didn't like me talking when the adults were talking in the room. That's one of my big stories, right? We were silenced a lot as children. And so if you have that story, then we can start looking at what is reflecting in that story. And sometimes it takes a little time for us to be aware when we're within that story and we're living that story so thoroughly. But I like to hold space for that so that we feel safe having, you know, talking about those stories, and that then we can start using the tools because we've brought them into an awareness, and we can start working on them right away, whether you are, you know, totally cognizant of what's happening or not, right? So then we start using the breath tools and the breath, including sound tools, because the sound, the vibration that's going to start moving things for you and integrating your vibration energetically before you even have to know what's going on. So what I've noticed, like even if we haven't gotten to big stories with my students around, you know, around the second month or so, they start being more vocal. And that sometimes looks like anger, and that sometimes looks like, you know, deeper conversations with their spouse. That sometimes looks like, you know, mommy has to have a talk, right? Like with their kids. So it really, people start to live into more of being authentic in their voice as they just experience this integration on a regular basis.
Beautiful. And as you're talking and I'm listening to this, this sort of coming into your own through, you know, both the breath work and the cycles and then using your voice more authentically, I'm thinking about what a lot of people are saying right now. So just for full disclosure, we're doing this conversation during the lockdown, right?
Yeah.
So you might hear dog bark. You might see a child run through the background. So it's the top of my mind, obviously, that there are people who are struggling with complex chronic issues who might be watching this, but there are also people who might be really impacted by, you know, the fear we were talking about earlier before the conversation started officially, and the feeling of being disempowered by this experience.
Yeah.
What are some of the things you would love everyone in the known universe to know or do every day to kind of mitigate that or even reverse some of that?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I can do a quick exercise because this is something I would wish for anybody to do anytime in their life. For my students, I usually bring up the grocery store before this actual problem where we're probably all having this anxiety on a regular basis. And this is just breathing. You don't even have to make a sound for this one, okay? So you're just going to breathe all the way out. We're just going to get rid of all of it. And then when you get to the bottom, we're going to breathe up as fast as possible. And then when you get to the bottom, you're going to go to S's. And then as you do that, I just want you to think all the way through your body and all the way through the floor. So I like to say for my students, they say through the perineum, through the floor, into the earth.
And right? What does S's mean? I missed that.
S's, I'm going to give you an example because it's basically a snake sound, right? So this is it. So we're going to breathe all the way out. Go to the S's. You can through the perineum, through the earth. And then you can't take it anymore. Just let that breath, that belly just flop back up and let that breath back in. And then if you just wait a second, you'll notice some tingles in the body. And then I always do this a few times. So the first one, there's a ton of tension. You probably didn't get it all out. Do it one more time, getting all the way out. And then S's. Can't take it anymore. Do the bang and do the earth. And just let that air back in. So there's so many things going on here. This is like my foundational tool. First of all, this is the immediate connection to the vagus nerve, what we were talking about before, the vagus nerve stimulation. When you hold your breath, that's part of the stimulation. But honestly, in my opinion, you have to get rid of your air first, because in order for your vocal cords to meet the back of your throat, voice box, I should say, to meet the back of your throat, you have to be in full relaxation. And so you have, in order, and that's my purpose of the breath outward for voicing, is that relaxation place and like getting really comfortable with that relaxation place. So when you breathe all the way out, it relaxes into the back, and then you can feel this kind of spread in the lower part of your throat. And that's where your actual voice box is, right? And, or at least the muscles that work it. And so when you do that, it just gets to massage that area that begins the vagus nerve stimulation. And so automatically, this is also my tool for performance, because kind of, if you can imagine, I mean, the person that's anxious and self-conscious going on stage needs a very foolproof tool before she goes and sings before hundreds and thousands of people. So one of the things that I have to do is this breath outward. Otherwise, I can't think, I can't remember the song, everything just flies out of my head, right? And so this is a foolproof thing because it's biological. Your body can't help but relax when you do this. So foolproof relaxation, foolproof. And then I don't know about you, but like if, when I do this a couple of times, I just feel like the super relaxation in my lower back as well. And as you know, like that's usually like for me, you know, it's a seat of anxiety. And depending on what you know, like the different energetic practices, it's usually, you know, in most energy work, Chinese, you know, comedic, like those energy work practices, that's where anxiety is held. So yeah, so it's just, if nothing else, you can just go straight to the biology and do this breath outward.
And are you saying like 10 times a day, every hour, once a day? What's your prescription?
My prescription is at minimum in the morning and the evening. Mm-hmm. And what I would like is for people to learn to do it anytime they realize they're holding their breath. So if that's too ephemeral, then when you're pissed off, when you're about to yell at your children, when you want to punch the guy in the line because he won't back up, when, you know, like real things happen every day, there's bound to be several moments in your day when you stop breathing. And the more we can be aware of those moments, the more we'll notice that we've cut off that cycle of energy, of breath.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, something you said earlier struck me, and I want to go back to it because it relates actually to a lot of the patients I see who are autistic and are nonverbal. Mm. Do you have thoughts sort of philosophically or clinically about what's going on there? How would you work with a child or a person who is nonverbal? They're breathing, obviously, but they're
Yeah, and I almost had a chance one time. I was like so excited. I should have just made them come. I almost had a chance one time to work with somebody who was nonverbal and would make sounds, but they weren't speaking. And in my, you know, philosophy, what that would take is a combination of breath and rhythm. Because a lot of autistic people, and there's a lot of musical, at least borderline autistic, I'm not sure the different levels, people. And what they usually end up working with are some kind of percussion instrument, like piano or percussion itself. And what happens is that once you have the sense of rhythm, then it can fall in line, in my opinion, and there's a number of studies on this, neurologically, because your body can feel before you can understand. This is the other huge tool of singing. Your body knows before you understand.
Say more about how the body knows before you understand.
Yeah. So the principles of energy worker is that there's a lot of things that you can't see that are working on your body and in your body. And your body, so the five senses are about you translating those things, whether you are actually in full use of the manifestation of those things. So sound, taste, that's the full manifestation. The preceding manifestation is, doesn't seem right. If you notice, like you might feel a little sourness on your tongue, right? If you have that feeling, right? There's like your body is translating these things, and whether you know, realize what's happening, it's already, you know, something that you know organically. You know, if it's sour, then it could be sour for a lot of reasons. So maybe I should look into this about why this is sour. And is this something I want to be sour, or is it supposed to be sour? Or should I, you know, is it safe, or do we have to think about what causes us that, right? Like, so that information, the body is constantly translating. And so it feels it before you do. And it knows it before you do. And so the fun thing about singing is that all of our major needs for voice, what makes voice and singing happen, are based on involuntary muscles, right? In order to breathe, our diaphragm has to move, which is involuntary. in order for us to actually speak, we need our voice box, but that is also involuntary. Like the muscle sets for the voice box are involuntary. And so basically you have to work on how the voice is already working, right? So you have to use what actually was already working. You don't get to like make up new rules on how to make a sound. So this is, you know, where people get in trouble when they're trying to fix their voice. You have to work with what's already there, and the body already knows how to make a sound. You don't think about how you're going to say the next word. You don't think how you're going to breathe to make a whole sentence happen. Like when you did the introduction, you're not like, how should I modulate this so people know that I don't hate this lady, right? Like that happens automatically. Yeah. And your body translates all of that information so that it communicates in a way that will keep you alive. This is a life thing for the body. So it's not going to fail you. Quick story.
Please.
After I had surgery, I you know, one of the scariest things for a singer is not to be able to sing. After I had surgery, my voice is completely uncontrollable because I had to cut into those muscles, right? I'm a little crazy. I was doing all this stuff, eating well, doing my work, my energetic exercise. Even though I can't sing, I can still voice, right? It doesn't have to be right for it to be right, right? And so I'm doing all that stuff and I'm like, just like probably pushing it a little, you know, trying to heal, get better. Less than a month later, I go to a retreat in Sedona.
Of course you did.
Without talking to anybody. So I went and I made it. That's all you need to know. And then, but there's it's an astrology retreat and we were doing a sound healing class. And so we were doing this thing and like people were just kind of experiencing the sound and we got really into it. And so we were encouraged to speak out. Well, I was encouraged and I told everybody to tell, even though I wasn't leading the class, I told everybody to speak out. Okay. And then I started singing. And I don't mean a little bit. I mean like full voice singing what I wanted to happen. Because what I consider singing to be channeling. And what the only way I can explain it, because my body still wasn't ready. The only way I can explain it is that I wasn't trying to sing. I was just translating what I was feeling and what needed to be expressed in the room. And my body figured out a way to make it happen. So when I say like the body knows, like in a way that I knew intellectually, I knew as a teacher, I knew, right? In a way that I just never could have imagined. It showed up on that day.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That must have been powerful for the participants who were there.
I think so. It was a very powerful experience for everybody. And I felt like also like we needed a covering because people weren't feeling safe to speak. They weren't feeling safe to make noises. And so I felt like it had to be enough where people felt like they could be safe in the soundscape of the room too.
So you spoke the feelings in the room so that others could find their voice, it sounds like. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing all of this. Is there anything else you really would like this population in particular to hear from you that we haven't discussed or touched on?
Yeah, a lot of people that aren't using their voices as the full tool that they can be used have a underlying thing of not feeling worthy, not feeling supported. I know from experience, not feeling supported, not feeling safe. And if nothing else, feel important enough to find out what that's about. You know, if nothing else, make time to find out what that's about. So, yeah, anytime you can't make time for that is the time then that you really aren't choosing to live in the full expression of your life. So just find out from somebody, and Kristen's going to provide some amazing ways to find out. So keep listening to that.
Including a way for them to work with you if they want to, right?
Yes, of course. Oh, yeah. So just find me. You can find me at that website, which Kristen will give you. And you can find me on Facebook at Get Vocal, which is a Facebook group on Facebook.
Awesome. On, surprisingly, Facebook.
Think about that. Yes. So it's about Get Vocal. So yeah. So we welcome everybody, everybody. You do not have to know anything about voice to start using it as a tool. And that's what we're always getting people to do more of.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your service to the world in that you are empowering people to step into their full authentic selves.
Yeah.
Bring their true voices. And that's such a beautiful mission.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for providing this wonderful platform and this safe space for everybody to find the tools they need to live their full life. I just need it and greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Healing Grove podcast. If you liked it, please be sure to like and subscribe. And if you want to deepen your experience further, consider grabbing a copy of the Healing Grove Playbook. With journal prompts for this podcast and 41 others, it's the perfect place to record your learnings, keep track of the tools you explore, and reflect on your own experience. Finally, it's important to mention that even though I am a doctor, nothing you hear on this podcast, whether from myself or my guests, constitutes medical advice. Any intervention you try should always be discussed with and supervised by a trusted member of your own healing team. Thanks for listening, and see you next time in the Healing Grove.